Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Watch every Premier League match this season with Sky Sports and Sports Extra.
Hello and welcome to the kickoff with myself, Cathal Minogue. We are up and running again. It's more than halfway through the season now, and it was a busy week of football. I'm delighted to say this is very exciting because not only is this man an Irish football legend, but he's also a legend of Marconi House, Today FM Towers, where this show is being recorded. It's the one and only Kevin Kilbane. How are you, sir?
I'm very good, Cathal. Yeah, very, very good indeed. Legend is probably an overused word, I think, for a lot of us when you finish. Hardly a legend, honest to God.
Yeah, well, look, you're definitely a legend in this building anyway.
Because yeah, that might be a good thing. I'll take that.
Yeah, for people that don't know, you used to work on Off the Ball, and yes. I joined Today FM just around the same time that you decided to go Dancing on Ice, and then you left,
right?
Off the Ball. So I was kind of coming in as you were coming out. But there was always the great stories about Kevin Kilbane, and I used to work on the Dermot and Dave show, and there was Kevin Kilbane and the Ice Cream Van was the song at the time. So so you're still talked about to this day around this building. Yeah. I'll let you know.
Let me tell you, I get more mileage out of the Ice Cream Van than most things. Let me tell you, honest to God, I can't believe that one. How many people have mentioned that to me over the years? Yeah.
How are things in Canada?
Everything's good. Everything's really good. Yeah. Obviously, now we're into the new year. We're looking forward now to the World Cup, which is coming in, 6 months' time at this stage now. So everyone's getting excited. Even the hockey nuts and the baseball nuts, whichever sport that you follow over here, even them are gradually now swaying towards a bit of the soccer, as they say over here. Yeah.
Okay. Well, and that's good, because that's exactly what you want when you're with a World Cup. You want to get people excited that where it's coming around to, and you want to bring new people into the sport as well. So you never know, you might have a few hockey players converting into soccer players over there.
I think that's what it's about, isn't it? It's the truth. I think we have it ourselves with the GAA and the rugby and everything like that, that if you can convert some of them to play the different game. We know the athletes that we have produced over the years, haven't we? We've in so many different codes, both male and female, that if we can get them, you know, I think for us, from our point of view, we know that football, that soccer is the most participated sport in Ireland. We know how big it is. But if you can convert a few, these athletes, I think, could go on and have good careers for themselves if they actually did convert, you know?
Mm. In terms of the time difference over there and you covering games, you work for TSN.
That's right.
Afternoon games, you're just working in the morning. Is that the way it kind of is? Do you find it hard to keep up with games, or is it all fine?
It depends. Primarily over here, we'll cover a lot of the MLS. So the MLS are obviously in our time zone, so we'll be fine on that one. Sometimes we get the West Coast games. For us, we'll be late at 11, 12 o'clock at night, some of those that'll be kicking off, because they're three hours behind us at that stage anyway. So we do get late games from that point of view. When we're covering Premier League and Champions League games, yeah, ours are Champions League games early afternoon. And obviously you get that later afternoon slot for the 8 p.m. kickoff. And Premier League, what I've tended to do with the Premier League call, really, whether I'm at home myself, I'll always get that 7:30 a.m. kick in the morning. So it's great for me to get a bit of peace. Sometimes I get up with one of my daughters. I'll stick the game on. We'll be playing. No, it's in the background for whatever reason. And then when we're covering those games, or if we're covering those games, it will in generally be a 10 a.m. kickoff for the 3 p.m. kickoffs on the Saturday, and perhaps a little bit earlier or later on the Sunday for the for the Sunday 2 p.m. kickoffs for you, and the 4 p.m. Yeah,
the Premier League is never short of talking points. Right now, it's all talk about managers in and managers out, and it's pretty crazy at the moment. I want to talk to you about Manchester United, obviously, because that's the biggest news. And at the moment, Darren Fletcher is at the helm. Am I right? I was actually speaking to Phil Egan up in the kitchen, and I was just telling him, oh, Kevin Kilbane's coming on. And he says, oh, do you know that there's a connection with Darren Fletcher and Kevin Kilbane? And he said that both of your Irish roots are Achill Island.
Achill Island, yeah. Phil's wife's actually from Achill as well. So he spends a lot of time over in Achill himself. So we have a connection there as well, which is always good. I think the Achill roots, when the connection's there, I think that you kind of keep hold of that a little bit. And wherever you go around the world, if I've ever spoke to anybody that's from Achill, whichever part of the island they're from, we have that connection. So Darren Fletcher's another one. He's a huge Mayo man. He would be a huge GAA man as well, to be honest with you. I would have met him lots of times over the years, whether that would have been on flights getting back from Manchester over. Primarily, it would be to an All-Ireland semi-final or a final for Darren, because he would only be able to take in one or two games a year. But he would be regularly at Croke Park watching Mayo over the years. And yeah, he's from Achill. His mom's from Achill. My father's from Achill. So yeah, we have that connection. Yeah.
It's a tricky one, isn't it, for him? Like, he's going in
Yeah.
at a very, very tough time. And obviously now the
Yeah.
talk is that he will look after the United team this weekend. They play Brighton in the FA Cup on Sunday. But then
Yeah.
the conversation at the moment is who is going to take over United in the interim to see out the season.
Yeah.
Ole is one. Michael Carrick is another. What are your thoughts?
Well, it's to be honest with you, Carl. It's a crazy scenario for me, and I know that it's been spoken about, the interim into the interim coach. It's just a bit of a strange one. Surely they are better off just sticking with Fletcher in the short term and really focus on getting a coach over the longer term period. Now, whether they think Darren Fletcher's up to it or not internally to take Man United for the next 15, 20 games or whatever it's going to be till the end of the season, they may feel differently that he might not be up to the job. But if they're giving it him instantly, it suggests that they feel as though he is up to it on a short-term basis. Obviously, him taking over to put it in an intro to get the interim in on the what the next what is it going to be? It's going to be 4 months or whatever it's going to be. That coach is going to be in place. There has been talk of Solskjaer. There's been talk of Carrick. It looks unlikely that those two are going to work together, and rightly so as well. I just think that both have been managers and coaches in their own right. It's a difficult scenario to put those two in together. I don't know the relationship between the two of them, but I think United would be best off. And again, look, there's so many people that have comments on Man United to make regular, and it's a funny one when you're listening to so many of the ex-players around Man United, because I always feel as though there's so much pressure on the United players and the United as a club, with the amount of media interest or media voices from ex-Man United players that have had so much success. I feel as though, Carl, it's the best. United should stick with Fletcher on the short term, medium term basis until they get a permanent coach in place. Because I just feel as though that uncertainty around another, because it say he wins the next game and the interim manager is not quite in place, and they have to wait another week or two down the line, and Fletcher's still in situ in that position. It just doesn't seem, it seems a bit of a crazy scenario, but let's be honest, it's Man United. There's been so many crazy scenarios over the last 10 or 15 years. The lack of stability at the club, coach after coach trying to replace Alex Ferguson. It hasn't worked for them. They're not in a position now where you look at United as a stable club. Let's be honest, the more likely Man United to get relegated from the Premier League than to win the Premier League right now. That's where they are. They're far off Arsenal, Liverpool. I know you talk about it in points basis right now, but they've not got European interest. So it's helping Man United to get a little bit of freshness into the legs going into the Premier League week in, week out, so they can get the results. But it's hardly entertaining football that you're seeing from Man United. That's been over the last, not just under Amorim, it's been under various coaches that they've had over the last 5 or 6 years. They've not been able to find it. It seems as though the club is a mess, and there is so much work that needs to be done, not just on the playing side of it.
And were you surprised to see Amorim go?
No. I thought he may have gone at the end of the season. Because I thought immediately, and it was nothing to do with systems or anything like that. It was just how he was coming across as the Man United manager, and he head coach, whatever role. I mean,
Yeah,
he
he
complained
wanted to
about
be
not being
manager.
manager.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. The message that he was coming out with week in, week out, it just seemed to clash with what the Man United supporters were wanting to hear. And certainly, as I said before, that core of media personnel that's involved now, that or is involved at various things like Sky, BBC over in England, and I watch the Premier League world. When I get watch a lot of the Premier League matches over here, you'll regularly see Scholes on there. You'll regularly see Nicky Butt, Andy Cole, Dwight York, all these ex-Man United guys that had so much success that are constantly speaking negatively around the team and around the club, and that is not going to help anybody. And that's the problem that they have. And I think for Amorim, he wasn't giving the right messages off. So constantly, after every game, when United had a defeat, the message that was coming out was being relayed by these ex-players, and it was being amplified so much. So the problem I think that United have got is that they've not had a strong enough manager. That's what I would say, and that's maybe Amorim's point. Amorim just didn't seem to have the right messages. It seemed to me like he was never strong enough with his message when he was coming out. He was trying to protect the club and players at times. And at times then he was coming out with ultra negative comments about players. He never seemed to strike a balance, I don't feel. And if you look around Liverpool over the last 10 years, you look around even Tottenham to an extent. I know Tottenham have not had success, but at least Tottenham have a way that they've been going about things. Yes, Arsenal have been majorly improved. And of course, Man City have been the benchmark. And whether it's been Pep Guardiola or before Pep Guardiola, Man City have been the pinnacle of English football for the last 10, 15 years. And largely it's been down to the infrastructure at the club, the everything that's been put in place for the managers to succeed. It seems to me like the manager's not being given the chance to succeed because of the things that have been going on around the team and around the club.
It does also feel like they just can't move on. Darren Fletcher's first press conference, and then he said that he rang Sir Alex, and he always gets. And I was just thinking, you don't need to bow the knee to the man. I think they need to move on. That's always going to be hovering around. And as you said, it's the class of 92, and it's all of these guys, and it's Roy Keane, all in the media, always talking about Manchester United. So it just feels like they just can't move on from any of this, can they?
I'd agree with that. I can't disagree with that whatsoever. And again, the media personnel and the guys that surround all these media networks that are constantly contributing are all Alex Ferguson's men. So Darren Ferguson, I felt the same. I'm not gonna criticize an Ackle man whatsoever, you know that. But I mean, he was asked the question straight, wasn't he? You've got to look at Darren Fletcher. He's asked the question, did you consult Alex Ferguson? That was the immediate question that he was asked. Yeah. So he has to answer it in an honest way. Mm. But the question in around any player that have been part of Alex Ferguson's teams are going to be constantly asked, have you consulted Alex Ferguson? And obviously they're not going to lie. They're going to have to give an honest answer and say what has actually happened. But it does put that cloud over the club, and immediately Fletcher will be criticised by certain people because of that. But he's having to give an answer. He has to answer in the way that he sees fit.
It's working both ways, isn't it? Between the media and the people. It's just that those conversations are always just going to be had.
Definitely. And that's what's going to constantly come up, no matter who it is. Even Amorim, I remember him being asked. Van Gaal, Moyes, Jose Mourinho, whoever it is, has been in at that club, they constantly get asked about Alex Ferguson because I'm not going to say it's a cloud that's hovering over them, because look, you'd be stupid if you've got a guy that's so closely connected with the club that constantly goes to all the games not to ask him, you know, his advice on certain things, because he's been a huge leader, and he's obviously got the mentality on how to coach and deal with large groups and personnel. But the way I would look at it is it is hindering because, and I think in fairness to Ferguson himself, Ferguson's tried to distance himself to an extent, hasn't he? He tried to allow everything else to take care of itself, manages to do it themselves. But the constant questioning or the constant message to all these coaches is, has Alex Ferguson spoken to you? Have you spoken to Fergie? Do you run things by him? And it's something that is over that team and over that club, and it will be for forever, really, because of the legacy that he's left.
Well, one manager who slept very well during the week was Keith Andrews. Your former teammate is doing a fantastic job at Brentford. I remember when they first announced that Keith Andrews was going to be the manager, there was a bit of surprise. Obviously, he was the set-piece coach at the time. And then there was a talk around Brentford that, there's going to be a relegation battle for them this year. They've lost a lot of players and things are going to be tough for Keith Andrews. He's currently sitting fifth in the Premier League. They had a brilliant win last night, beating Sunderland 3-0. He's doing a fantastic job at him, albeit the club that he is going into seems to be so well ran that it's set up for him brilliantly. As a teammate, are you surprised with the success he's having?
No, not at all. And again, I worked with Keith closely before he went into coaching. I know that coaching was always on his radar, but he started off doing bits.
Did you work together downstairs as well in Off the Ball at one stage?
Yeah, we did. We worked in Off the Ball together, yeah. And also we worked at Virgin together when we were doing Champions League and Europa League together as well. So Keith and I worked very close. I was obviously living in Dublin then. Keith was kind of back and forth a little bit more than me because he had the Sky gig as well. I was doing bits with the BBC, but primarily we were both based in Dublin together, so it was nice. We get out and have a round of golf here and there together. Keith was a lot better than I was at golf, I have to say that. But I'm delighted for Keith because that was always his plan. Look, when I was getting into media after I finished, it wasn't so much I didn't have a plan, but I felt as though that I wanted to focus solely on doing what I could well if I was doing media work. I wanted to try to, you know, to do everything right to make me, as good as I can be to do that. Keith always had an eye on stepping away from that and into coaching. That's what he wanted to do. And once he got the job with Stephen Kenny, with the Irish setup, or he was actually with the 21s to start with. He'd taken the under 21 job, and he was still actually doing media work with me at the time. So I was getting a good insight into his brain and what he was wanting to do and where he was looking to go. I think it was a surprise to a lot of people that he got the head coach job maybe so quickly in his coaching career at Brentford. But Keith's impressive. Keith is an extremely impressive person, and his coaching knowledge, I've never seen him on the coaching field, so I don't know that, but I could tell from what he was looking to implement, even when we were working together, and how he was, you know, how he was talking to me on structures of side and club structures and everything that goes around the team to get the best out of the team. It works perfectly for a club like Brentford, his mentality as well. And you can see the players have got a great relationship with him. And I know that's an easy thing to say when you're going out onto the pitch and you're hugging your players and things like that. It looks a bit false at times. I wouldn't be really in favour of all that all the time. But you can see by players' faces that it's genuine. That's the way that I would look at it. So Keith's in a good position. He knows full well that it's basically only the start of his managerial career. So he's got a long way to go, but he's had a great start. It helps that he's got a great goalkeeper in Queven in goal for him. And it helps that Nathan Collins is playing so well at the back for him as well. So it's great that there's a real good Irish core and an Irish connection connected with Brentford. And it keeps us all interested in that team, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, it definitely creates more interest. And you see how special it is to have an Irish manager over a Premier League team. You know, after every weekend, you're checking the results. How did Brentford do? You know, if Sky are showing their game, you'll sit down and watch it.
Definitely. And I need to look back, even my time at Sunderland, Niall Quinn, obviously, was at Sunderland. I was at Sunderland. Huge Irish connection at Sunderland, going back even to Roy Keane's days when he was coach, when Dave Connolly was playing for Graham Kavanagh, Kenny Cunningham. Obviously, Niall Quinn was chairman at the club as well. So there was a big Irish connection there with Sunderland. And I think it's been the case over the years as well with various teams. My old team, Everton, there was good Irish connections there over the years as well. So when there's an Irish connection, it's great that we can get on board and start supporting. I'm not just trying to say people just jump on the bandwagon for that reason, but let's be honest, we don't have enough players playing at the top level. And probably our national team's level right now is teams like Brentford. That's the, you know, Brentford, Brighton, mid-table Premier League sides. I mean, I know that Brentford are really on the up and they've got a chance of qualifying for the Europa League this season. But that's where our level is. Our max level seems to be a club like Brentford right now. And if we can get enough players involved at Brentford, Crystal Palace, Brighton, or whoever it would be, you know, the mid-tier Premier League sides, I think we've got a chance of improving the national team as well. So to have that connection and to have that and have our players fully invested in those clubs, I think it's going to be great for the national team as well. And it gives us more chance to qualify for major tournaments going forward.
Yeah, 70-odd days until that game against Czechia. We're counting down the days.
Yeah, I'm counting down, Carl, let me tell you.
But look, before I let you go, I have to ask you, Kevin, have you seen Saipan the movie yet?
I watched it two nights ago. Believe it or not, I was sent. I had to do a review. I've done a little bit. I have an Irish Times column. I don't want to. Yeah. I do a column, and I've done a little bit of a review for this week, in my column. So I watched it. It's very embellished. That's the only way that I can say it. A lot what is said within that movie did not happen, Carl. I can tell you that right now.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Did it open up some wounds for you when you were watching it, though? Were you like, oh, God?
I was actually laughing. I watched it with my wife. My wife watched it because she doesn't really have an insight into my playing career at all. And I said, look, I've got this movie. Do you want to watch it? So we sat down together and we watched it. And it seemed like every 2 minutes in the movie, I'm saying to my wife, that didn't happen. That didn't happen. Okay. This didn't happen. That didn't happen. That's a load of BS. And so she was getting more annoyed than I was. I was kind of laughing at some of the scenes right. within it. And she was getting more annoyed at watching the movie than I was. So
she was just trying to
quite funny.
She was just trying to watch the movie and you're the annoying person beside her.
I can tell you that's exactly what it was. It was almost, will you shut up? Let me watch it, will you? Jesus. It was a bit like that. But I was kind of laughing at some of the scenes that were in it. The sauna scene especially is the most comical scene that I've ever seen. So that was the thing. I think, look, what I would say as well, Carl, I think it makes us look like a pub team. It makes us look like that we were totally unprofessional. The game changed. After Arsene Wenger came into English football, the game changed. You couldn't play at the top level if you went out and carried on like the carry on that it says that we went on. Look, we had 5, 6, 7 members of our side that didn't even drink, wouldn't even touch alcohol. And we had so many of our players around that time that were so professional in their approach, that, you know, methodical in their approach, that they were like, I always remember even going back, someone like Stephen Carr, we went away to Macedonia in maybe 98, 99, something like that it was. And we're away in Macedonia and Stephen Carr was just eating bananas for the trip because the food was so bad that when we were in, I think it was Macedonia, I'm sure it was. It was an Eastern European country.
Yeah.
Stephen Carr was just eating bananas because he wouldn't eat the crap. That's going back 4 or 5 years before that. The lads wouldn't be, look, there was, you know, the cheese sandwiches and stuff that was always going up to the room. It would have been more of the older players that were part of that squad, that were part of Big Jack's team, that would have had the sandwiches and things like that. But we never did that. We weren't, we didn't do it. And that's the truth. We honestly didn't do it. So there's so much that you laugh at because 90% of that team wouldn't have been doing half the things that it said in the movie.
Okay, so you're not giving it 5 stars in your movie review in the Irish Times?
As a movie, we'll give it a 5-star because it's the comical element. But as it's going on a true fact movie, I'll give it 0 stars because you know everything was wrong about the movie. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm going to see it this weekend. So thank God I'm not going watching it with you because that's wrong.
listen. Let's talk about it next week. You can give me your review and ask me the questions about what was said and done in the movie, and I'll give you 100% honesty. If you ask me any question, I'll give you 100% honesty.
Okay. I'll have to do it. So, Kevin, it's been a joy talking to you, man. We miss you around here. We miss you around the building. We're going to have to.
I miss Ireland. Honestly, I miss home an awful lot. Let me tell you.
Thanks a million for chatting with me. Enjoy the football for the rest of the season, and hopefully we'll have you on the show again soon.
Good man. Cheers, Carl. Thank you.
Thanks, Kevin. Thank you.
The Kickoff
with Carl Minogue and Sky Sports.
Welcome back to The Kickoff. The man sitting in front of me, virtually sitting in front of me, donning an incredible retro Manchester United Adidas jacket, is the one and only Brian Redmond. Brian Redmond, Dancing with the Stars, judge, radio presenter, TV presenter, and yes, he's a Manchester United fan. Are you okay, Brian?
I am definitely leaning into the retro 100%. Even it comes to choosing what to wear to chat to you today, I thought, no, I'm not going to stick on one of the modern pieces of kit. I'm done with all that fancy gold Ruben Amorim stuff that he's been wearing that I really, really liked. And I've gone back to the heydays of the 80s and 90s to find something to wear. And I wish we were on the pitch as well.
I know, yeah. You probably just dream of the glory days that were. It's been a bit of a turbulent time. It's been a bit of a busy time for you as well. How is the new season of Dancing with the Stars going?
Well, we started, you know, we've got the first show done. That's happening. Second show, 11 weeks of it. It's absolutely fabulous. The first show, was great. I mean, we had a new judge, Oti Mabuse, joined us as the new head judge, well known from TV in the UK. So delighted to see that RTE were as sort of as forward thinking, as progressive to even, you know, pick up the phone and ask. But not only did they ask, she said yes. So there's something going on there. But that was great to see and great to have her join us. So that's been fun. Record numbers for show one, which is phenomenal as well. So I don't think we've torn the backside of it out just yet, Carl.
No. And you could use the Oti Mabuse signing kind of in a football sense as well, because the January transfer window is now open. And, you know, Manchester United could do with that bit of extra star power at the moment. And then maybe, you never know, you'd be breaking record numbers again.
Yeah, well, I think the challenge is, weirdly, I mean, I watched the Burnley game the other night and it was just a bit blah. You know what I mean? In terms of how it finished, the result being 2-2. The disappointing thing for me, Carl, if you want to talk seriously about football at the moment, is actually what's happening on the pitch at Manchester United at the moment for me is secondary compared to what's happening in the boardroom within management structures. Because, you know, the future of the club on the pitch is going to be completely determined now by the decision that's made in the boardroom. Who's going to be that next manager? Who's going to be the interim manager? And is it just going to be more of the same? Are we going to get Ollie Ball for another 6 months till the end of the season? And then they'll go, oh, well, he's done a good job. He went on an 8-game winning run like he did the last time. You know, give him the job full time. They've got a grasp of the nettle now for me. I think maybe we felt with Amorim that was going to be the nettle grasped, and we had a manager to sort of hang our hat on for the next 10 or 15 years. But they've certainly proved in the interactions with him over the last couple of weeks, they don't want somebody who says no.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to get a yes man again, whether it's a yes man just as an interim boss or whether it's going to be a yes man followed by another yes man, only time will tell.
Yeah, well, let's talk about it for a second. So at the moment, you have Darren Fletcher at the helm. He will be definitely looking after the team this weekend when they take on Brighton in the FA Cup. It's on this Sunday in Old Trafford. The talk is that it's either going to be Ole at the wheel again or it'll be Michael Carrick. Seems like more of the same, as you said, but what are the other options? In terms of Amorim, were you a fan? What way were you thinking? Were you getting tired of the formation he was playing and the fact that he was not for budging? Although he did budge for one game just before he left and then went back to his old system as well. So it was all a bit strange coming up near the end of it.
It was. It was very, very strange. Amorim the man, Amorim the manager. He wasn't a manager. That was the thing at the end, wasn't he? He was the head coach. I mean, a very different sort of sense of the responsibility and the control that you have with those two titles. Yes, I liked him. I thought he was able to strike a balance between having maybe the type of persona, the type of gravitas that you would hope maybe a Roy Keane would have. God forbid we should get him as a manager. And yet still seeming slightly affable and not just narky for the sake of it. So I like that. I have to say, I didn't get his commitment to the system. And I actually wonder whether the Manchester United hierarchy made for a rod for their own back in that appointment. Because they said they were appointing him to play that system. Well, I mean, if you appoint a man to play a system, surely playing the system is him doing his job rather than you going halfway through the first full season that he had in charge. Would you consider changing the system? That, I think, from his perspective, must have given him a sense that actually these guys don't know what they're talking about. They brought me in. They told me to play a system. They brought me in for playing that system. And now they want me to change it. So I do think even in the Burnley game that we saw the other night, it makes sense to find a system that gets Bruno further up the field. It makes sense to find a system whereby you can get a little bit of width in those attacking three. Look what happened. Sesko struggling. You give him a bit of width, you give him Bruno playing through balls, and the two goals, one, Bruno in advanced position, ball played through, goal one. Second goal, Dorgu wide in the left, early cross, goal two.
Great goals as well.
Both of them great finishes, you know. So from that perspective, when I look back at Ruben Aberin's time there, I don't get the commitment to the system. I don't get the inflexibility within his approach to the system. But maybe the fact that they hung their hat on bringing him in to play that system was enough encouragement for him not to change. So I think there's positives in terms of the change of the system, but I'm just disappointed that we don't know what type of system we're going to have going forward now.
And what is the hope going forward? Have you anyone top of mind that you would like to see come in, fresh start, or would you like to see Ole back at the wheel?
I don't think there is a fresh start, Cahill. I don't think there's a type of appointment that you could say it's a new approach, because when you look at the appointments that we've had, you know, we all harp on about the since Alex Ferguson era. We've had the superstar managers in the likes of Mourinho and others that have come in that regard as well. We've had the boot room type appointments with the likes of Ollie. That didn't work. We had the new up and coming hot young European manager in Ruben Amorim. That didn't work. I don't know what other types of managers there are out there. So I think whatever the appointment is, it will be going back to one of those three things. I also don't think maybe I'm wrong. I'd love to see the boardroom have the confidence in themselves to appoint somebody who isn't going to be a yes man.
Yeah.
You know, but that's going to be brave. I mean, Roy Keane is probably never going to happen for us, especially with Alex Ferguson still being there. Could they build, you know, whatever bridges they might need to build to be in the same building at the same time? I don't know. Would Roy Keane take the job other than having full autonomous control over every decision that's made? Probably not. Would the board be willing to do that to get him in? Probably not. So I think that rules that out. So I think I find myself weirdly going maybe a character like a Michael Carrick, who's got a bit of the Keane thing, and maybe has been around the club during the Glinios era, as it's often referred to, under the Glazers and now with Ineos as well. Maybe he's just enough of a sort of inside man for them to accept him, but just sort of enough of his own man to be able to do what he wants as well. So honestly, Cole, I have no idea. I do feel a little bit afraid of the fact that a lot of the outlets are talking about waiting until the summer.
Yeah.
And that's not even waiting until the summer, because when they're saying that, what they actually mean is waiting until after the World Cup. Now, that's not the summer. That's the start of the season. Mm. I mean, whatever about having a deal in place and being able to bring somebody in. But would those international managers be willing to say ahead of the World Cup to their international players, to their international supporters, oh, by the way, I'm only here for the World Cup, and once it's gone, I'm off to Old Trafford. Unless that's happened, or unless it's happened behind, you know, closed doors where they can start putting the plan in place, I just fear that it's going to be left so late in the summer to see who's available after the World Cup, who's the new hot thing after the World Cup, that actually you can write off next season as well. So there's a big concern for me in that. Here's one for you. What about Keith Andrews?
I was talking to Kevin Kilbane on the show earlier on, and I was asking him about Keith Andrews, because obviously they played together under Trapattoni. That's an incredible story as well, because when Keith took over the job, you know, they were, Brentford have lost a lot of players, relegation could be on the horizon, and Keith has done a fantastic job. But you would have to say, the structure and the club that Keith is working for is very stable, where it's quite a shaky ship in Manchester.
It is, but again, I would sort of rate Keith Andrews, obviously he's a young manager, he's only really had this one major posting as the manager. He's been involved in a few coaching sort of scenarios and setups behind the scenes. But we would often say about a manager, you know, are they burnt out? Well, he's not burnt out because he's only just started. Have they got Premier League experience? Well, he's got Premier League experience, not, I give you, at a massive club, but Alex Ferguson, Aberdeen, I know they'd won European titles and things like that, but the structure of going from Aberdeen to Manchester United, they're very different in terms of the volume of the work, the scale of the club. So there might be something in an appointment like that. I also think when I look at Keith Andrews, he plays fantastic football. I mean, again, while Manchester United are drawing 2-2 on Wednesday night, while City and all of the other top teams are sort of maybe at best getting a draw out of a game against teams they should be beating, here he is absolutely hammering Sunderland 3-0. And Sunderland's only Sunderland, but they've been going well also. So he might also be stern enough, if you like, to feel new, to put the players on their back foot a little bit. He might be staring enough to put the boardroom on their back foot a little bit, but also understanding the fact that he isn't coming from a club like Real Madrid, where he's managed at that sort of level, that he's going to need help and support around him. So do you give it to a Keith Andrews to lead the line? That'd be interesting. A lot of people talking about Maresca as well. Mm. Now, the thing that gets me with Maresca is I could see that happening, because it's Manchester City dressed up in red and black, basically, at the moment, isn't it? You've got Omar Berada in there. You've got Jason Wilcox, who, although was at other clubs, has a big City connection. And you've got Maresca, who was there under some of those earlier Pep regimes as a coach. I mean, somebody like a Maresca coming in, that's absolute poison. I think unless somebody like Maresca gets off and wins his first 10 games in a row, he's going to absolutely get the wrath of the fans, and I think the board will attract it towards them as well. So Keith Andrews, neutral, hasn't got a connection to Liverpool, hasn't got a connection to City from his playing days, quite a neutral type of character. I did say it sort of in jest a few moments ago, Carl, but the more I talk about it, the more I think it could be worth considering.
Yeah, it doesn't sound too bad. Can I talk to you about your own experience of supporting Manchester United? From an early age, is it an influence at home? How did you start supporting them?
Yeah, I mean, my sort of influence, my family influence, goes right back to my grandfather on my father's side, a man who was a football fan along with his brothers. He was born in Ringsend in Dublin, was a proper original Shamrock Rovers fan, but his two clubs were Shamrock Rovers and Manchester United, and that's passed down to my father, my uncle on that side, all of my male cousins, bar one, who's sort of excluded from family arrangements, are Manchester United fans. The one Liverpool fan, I don't know where he must have been adopted. Definitely had to have been adopted.
The one you don't talk about. Brother.
Yeah, no, we don't even acknowledge him. We don't even call him by name. You know, it's just here, you know. But yeah, I mean, it's absolutely fabulous. What I love about it, apart from the passion for the game and the passion for the moments within Manchester United's history, and we'd be lucky to have them, is how it connects the boys within the family. I mean, we have a WhatsApp group. It's called Boys Only. It's myself, my dad, and my brother. Typical in fashion for that type of WhatsApp group. You know, somebody could lose a leg during the week and there'd be no interaction on it. But as soon as the starting 11 is announced, it lights up and it remains lit up right the way through the game. At which point it goes, right, I'll talk to you on Sunday, you know, during the FA Cup match.
Yeah.
So I like the fact it brings it together. We've been over to Old Trafford a number of times together. Last time was the Villa game at the end of last season. Thankfully, we got to see a win. We got to see Martinez absolutely lift somebody out of it 20 minutes into the game, get sent off. We had fun at waving at him and booing at him as he went. And 3 months later, we were going, oh, hope we signed Martinez. You know, that didn't come to fruition either. So it's been absolutely fabulous. It's I love how soccer and sport in general maybe motivates people. You know, it motivates them to get off the sofa themselves. If you're playing a bit of, you know, over 40s kickabout on a Monday night, great. If you're going to games, whether they're local games here or traveling across to the UK, great. But I do love the way it connects people. And in my world with football, it's mostly the boys that get connected. So it's fabulous. It's really important to me.
Yeah. Did you kick a bit of ball back in the day and maybe have to stop because the dancing, you just couldn't get injured?
Well, I never really thought of it like that. I've always loved sports. I've always played lots of different sports. Now, maybe in later years, I'm in my mid-40s now, less and less often. But, you know, never really played for schools and things like that, but never really had the time beyond the school schedule to be playing other sports because the weekends, the evenings, were all sort of caught up with, you know, training from a dance perspective.
Yeah.
But my favourite years in life were, I can tell you exactly where it is, I can still see it, when you turned onto Air Road, the lamppost that had the tree that was about 8 yards away from it, and 4 yards behind the lamppost and the tree with the back wall of the nuns' convent, so it was great if you scored a goal, you know, the ball wasn't halfway across the field,
yeah.
There was the little worn out between those two things. I mean, it was mad to think about being a goalkeeper in a game of heads and volleys because you literally had 2 yards of grass. If you came out of your box, you were having to climb over the curb and then dive onto the concrete at the tarmac to try and save something, you know. So heads and volleys at the end of the road in my latter years. Thankfully, the nuns didn't seem to mind us hopping over the convent wall too often. So I loved it in that regard. I enjoyed it. I always enjoyed playing sport, but never really got to play sport at a hugely competitive level because I just didn't have the time.
Yeah, I'd say your dance teacher would have been screaming at you at a young age, saw the potential in you as a dancer, and then sees you jumping over curbs and walls, going chasing after a ball, said, no, mind the feet.
Well, the interesting question I think Carl to ask me would be, do I now, as a judge on Dancing with the Stars, wish I'd spent more time on my football and less time on my dancing, and maybe I could be up for a Man United manager job? Who knows? I mean, I don't know which would be easier or more challenging in this regard, and what type of manager I'd be. Would I be an Ollie type manager, or would I be sort of a bit grumpier? I think you could probably work that one out for yourself.
Yeah, I think I'd be going Roy Keane-esque, maybe. There might be a bit of an iron fist. That's what's needed right now.
100%. I think the one thing I would say about Amorim, in fairness to him, is I think he's laid a lot of groundwork for whoever might come after him, because he's cleaned out, with the help of the board, you've got to give them some acknowledgement, some of those characters that might have been a bit sort of uneasy in that dressing room. You know, Rashford's gone, Anthony's gone. We know what Garnacho is, if we didn't know it before. Some of the posts on social media since he's joined Chelsea have really allowed him to show his true colours. We've seen Onana head off to Turkey. Problem is, you know, if Ollie comes in, will some of those players who maybe, take Rashford as an example, can Barcelona afford him? If they can't afford him, would he be happy to come back to Manchester United? Do we want him back? So is the clean out that we think that has been done a permanent one? I don't know. I sort of hope it is.
Well, you're at your judges' table. Amram has finished. What score out of 10 are you giving him?
I think it happens occasionally on Dancing with the Stars when I give a competitor a slightly higher score than my fellow judges. I would probably be giving Amram a 7, you know, at this point in time. I think generally speaking, he was on the right path. He did need to be a bit more flexible with some of his choices. Sometimes called the problem isn't the problem. It's how you deal with the problem. And there were problems within the Amram reign. But I think both Jason Wilcox and he, as in Amram, probably dealt with that problem badly. You know, I think a softer approach to Wilcox saying to him, you know, should you consider changing the tactics? A softly approach to maybe allowing Amram settle into that thought. Because remember, for months he was saying, never. Even if the Pope asked me, I wouldn't change the tactics. Yeah. And he did. Once. So I think he was already starting to turn in that regard. So I think there was a problem with the tactics. I think a lot of stuff was done well. I think a softer approach to dealing with the problems that still remained probably could have seen Amram still being there. And in that regard, I'm sorry to see him go, and I'd probably give him a 7.
Seven, that's not too bad. A lot of people would give it.
Not for me, it's not.
No, definitely not for you. Definitely not for you. Final question before I let you go. Goal for this season. So you're currently 7th in the league. I'm guessing Europe is what you want, but where would you ideally like to be placed at the end of the season?
I think I would now set our expectations maybe a little bit higher than we had at the start of the season. European football would have been what we took when it all kicked off. I think we've squandered so many opportunities to break into that top four over the last 4 or 5 weeks. I'm going to say something that's a ridiculous thing that sports fans and soccer fans say when we talk about ifs and buts and maybes and what ifs. You know, when you think the 6 bottom teams currently in the Premier League as we speak are all teams that we've played. We played Wolves twice, all the rest of them we've played once. We've dropped 12 points this year against the bottom 6 teams.
Yeah.
If you added those 12 points to our current league position, we'd be 2nd. Now, I know I'm dreaming. I know I'm dreaming. I get that. But I think trying to push for that top 4 would be where we should be aiming. If we fall short of that target, we still end up in Europe. If you push for Europe and fall short, then you're back into the same old system as next year, where you're relying on a Carabao Cup run and the FA Cup kicking off to have more than one game a week. I think, you know, top 3... for me, in whatever order, are probably relatively well set, where you're looking at Arsenal, City, and I would say probably Villa, because they're only showing a bit more consistency than the likes of Chelsea and Liverpool. Maybe dreaming a little bit, considering, you know, we've now got no manager. Chelsea have reappointed a new manager. Liverpool are hanging on to Arne Slot with their fingernails at the moment. I would aim top 4, and I think it's achievable, but we've just got to get some consistency into those performances against the lower table teams.
Well, it's definitely never a boring time to be a Manchester United fan. I wonder now, actually, I must keep an eye. When Manchester United are playing on a Sunday and it's a bad result, I must just check, are you that small bit grumpier on the dance floor? Are you, yeah? Is that, does it affect you?
I was on set last season, right, when Liverpool beat Manchester United 7-0, don't forget, right? I had Jake Carter, Karen Byrne, my fellow judge's now fiance, on set. He's an actual scouser, right? Yeah. You could imagine it. I've also had, at moments, during the live show with some of the late kickoffs, audience members sit across from me making gestures at in 2-0 or 3-0 or 4-1. So you don't want to be in front of me doing a dodgy chat if Manchester United have just lost to Liverpool 7-0. I can tell you that for a fact.
Brian Redmond, thanks a million. Best of luck with the new season of Dancing with the Stars, and best of luck this season, the remainder of the season, being a Manchester United fan. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, Carl. Pleasure as always.
Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Watch every Premier League match this season with Sky Sports and Sports Extra.